In the dark times, if you have something to hold on to, which is yourself, you'll survive. Whoopi Goldberg. Hey everyone, welcome to the 8th episode of How Are You? Really? And I'm your host, Nick. And today we're going to be discussing a heavily discussed disorder. It's pretty pertinent in the pop culture these days. It's PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And just a little footnote here, most of the information that I got for this is from psychiatry.org. So post-traumatic stress disorder is defined as a psychiatric disorder that can occur in people who have experienced or witnessed a traumatic event, such as a natural disaster, a serious accident, a terrorist act, war or combat, rape, or other violent personal assaults. Okay, so PTSD has been known by many names over the years, such as shell shock during World War I and combat fatigue following World War II. And although it's mostly referred to war veterans, or referenced through war veterans, PTSD doesn't strictly affect them. As referenced before in the definition there, PTSD can occur in all people across all walks of life and locations. The disorder affects approximately 3.5% of U.S. adults, and an estimated 1 in 11 people will experience PTSD at some point in their lifetime. So individuals suffering from PTSD continue to have intense, disturbing thoughts and feelings related to their experience that last long after the traumatic event has ended. So the sufferers may relive the event through flashbacks or nightmares. They may feel continuous sadness, fear, or anger, and they may feel detached from other people. Individuals will avoid situations or people that remind them of the traumatic event, and they may have strong negative reactions to something as ordinary as a loud noise or even an accidental touch. And let's get into some symptoms and diagnosis. So one symptom, as it's kind of mentioned before, is intrusive thoughts, such as repeated involuntary memories, distressing dreams, or flashbacks of the traumatic event. The flashbacks can be so vivid that people feel that they are reliving the traumatic experience or seeing it before their very eyes. The second symptom is avoiding reminders. So avoiding reminders of the traumatic event can include avoiding people, places, activities, objects, and situations that bring on distressing memories. People may try to avoid remembering or thinking about the traumatic event. They also resist talking about what happened or even how they feel about it. So, you know, which can be, as I'm sure you can piece together, pretty detrimental to an individual, you know, just bottling it all up and until you eventually, you know, explode or boil over. Negative thoughts and feelings, and this may include ongoing or distorted thoughts about oneself or others. For example, I am bad because of the things I've done, or no one can be trusted. So ongoing fear, horror, anger, guilt, or shame. Much less interest in activities previously enjoyed, or feelings of detachment and being estranged from others. And this one, just from personal experience, is pretty, this number three, negative thoughts and feelings, this symptom is pretty prevalent in some of the sexually assaulted and, you know, rape victims that I worked with in my time at Rella Mental Health. There was a few people who were suffering from PTSD along with some other disorders, and they kind of fell under that, the distorted thoughts about oneself, you know, they would feel like they're sort of half a person or like forever damaged because of the experience that had happened to them, and they would, you know, have flashbacks to the event, that's some pretty intense stuff I was just thinking about there, but, it's incredible to think about just how damaging that can be to a person, an instance like that, because just ruins the picture of yourself that you have in your mind is just completely ruined by an event like that, and you no longer see yourself as an equal to other people, you know, that you're less than other people because of what has happened to you, you know, which is just incredibly, incredibly sad, and, you know, it's terrible that, you know, people kind of do that to each other. But anyway, the fourth one, arousal and reactive symptoms. And this may include being irritable and having angry outbursts, behaving recklessly or in a self-destructive way, being easily startled or having problems concentrating and sleeping. And this one, you know, we see that in some war veterans also, you know, the irritability, angry outbursts, you know, that can stem from, you know, having those flashbacks from the times at war kind of hitting when, you know, at unexpected times. And, you know, that could really make some regular everyday situations into some pretty scary events also. So many people who are exposed to a traumatic event experience symptoms like those I just described in the days following the event, right? But for someone with PTSD, however, symptoms last for more than a month and often persist for months and sometimes even years. These symptoms can cause significant distress or problems functioning, as we sort of mentioned before. And PTSD often occurs with other related conditions such as depression, substance use and abuse, memory problems, and other physical and mental health issues, which also makes PTSD really difficult and complex, like, you know, as pretty much all of this is, just because you can take on symptoms and pieces of other disorders like the depression or the substance use and abuse, you know, and then that kind of factors into your overall makeup, and then it makes it a little more difficult to determine, you know, whether it's from the PTSD or not, and, you know, how exactly you're going to go about treating them. Which leads me into the next piece on treatments, and fortunately, psychotherapy, and more specifically, cognitive behavioral therapy, which we've discussed a lot, is very effective in treating PTSD. Three specific types of CBT are generally utilized for PTSD patients. And the first one is cognitive processing therapy, which focuses on modifying painful negative emotions such as shame, guilt, and beliefs like I have failed or the world is dangerous, which are all due to the trauma. Therapists help the person confront such distressing memories and emotions. The prolonged exposure therapy, this one uses repeated detailed imaging of the trauma and progressive exposures to symptom triggers in a safe, controlled way to help the person face and gain control of the fear and distress and, you know, help them learn to cope. So, for example, virtual reality programs have been used to help war veterans with PTSD re-experience the battlefield in a controlled, therapeutic way so they can kind of work through the trauma and sort of see the end to it and, you know, hopefully it will ease some of the stress once they're a little more capable of, you know, handling those negative emotions. So, stress inoculation therapy. This one involves a variety of ways to manage anxiety, such as education, muscle tension, muscle relaxation training, and biofeedback. This may include social skills training, role playing, distraction techniques, positive thinking, and self-talk. And, you know, there are a couple other psychotherapies such as interpersonal, supportive, and psychodynamic therapies, which focus on the emotional and interpersonal aspects of PTSD. And these may be helpful for people who don't want to expose themselves to the reminders of their trauma. So that is a lot to kind of take in there, but, you know, it's just really trying to help an individual work through the traumatic event by reliving it for the most part. And if you're not capable of doing that, which, you know, is pretty understandable, just work on other de-stressing ways and really focus on the emotional pieces along with the interpersonal, seeing as a lot of war veterans can kind of isolate themselves within, like, they come back to their family and have a really difficult time readjusting to civilian life. So this can kind of push them away from normal activities because their minds are still kind of in battle or war mode. So it's difficult to, you know, just take your kids to school or go out and play, you know, football or softball or something with your kids. It's hard to make that adjustment back, which then, you know, you start pushing away the people closest to you. And then that could lead to, you know, deeper traumas within the trauma that's kind of already encapsulated you. So, you know, and that can get pretty pretty dicey pretty quickly. And then there are also medication options that can help to control the symptoms of PTSD. So in addition, the symptom relief that medication provides also allows many individuals to then participate more effectively in psychotherapy. So, you know, sometimes you can prescribe antidepressants, which are commonly used to treat core symptoms of PTSD. And then these can be used either alone or along with the psychotherapy or other treatment options. So, you know, you could potentially start an individual off on an antidepressant, anti-anxiety, or something along those lines to kind of take the edge off. So, and when starting a medication routine, it kind of takes a couple weeks for the body to get used to this new chemical being introduced. And then, so once that process kicks in, then you could potentially start the other treatment options, the CBT, and then that might allow you to get to a point where you work through your trauma and then are able to sort of taper off and just get off the medication completely, or maybe stay on it and just continue to work through the CBT. You know, it, again, always depends on a case-by-case basis. So, and then also, depending on, again, the case-by-case, group therapy or family therapy can also be really effective in certain cases. So in conclusion, while PTSD can be the result of experiencing any traumatic experience in any facet of life, I thought it would be beneficial to discuss the most high-risk occupations for suffering from PTSD. So then if you are working in one of these occupation categories, then maybe you can kind of increase your awareness to what you're feeling, how you're feeling, you know, just to be a little more aware of the possibilities of suffering from this disorder, or you know, allowing this disorder to develop within you. So, you know, just kind of be more aware of how you're feeling at any given moment, especially if you are in these seven occupations, which I got this information also from DesertHopeTreatment.com. So the first one out of the seven is obviously military, and the experience of combat is a high risk factor for the development of PTSD. Combat veterans appear to develop PTSD at different rates depending on the conflict. So, for example, veterans involved in operations Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom are reported to have rates of PTSD of 11 to 20%. So that could, at 20%, you know, that's one in five people for you keeping track out there. The Gulf War veterans have rates of PTSD around 12%. Rates of PTSD in Vietnam veterans are reported to be between 15 and 20%, although the lifetime prevalence in Vietnam vets, so which meaning this could develop over time, not necessarily a few years after you return, this percentage can be in as high as 30%. A large number of individuals in the military also report experiencing sexual harassment and sexual abuse. This has been a pretty prevalent problem over the years, but it's not always talked about that much. The rates of PTSD as a result of these experiences are not well defined because of a lack of information, and unfortunately a lot of it gets covered up and hushed and swept under the rug. But it could be expected that these PTSD rates would be relatively high compared to the overall rate of PTSD in the general population stemming from these sort of experiences, which is, you know, really unfortunate, especially when a lot of that is probably preventable too. The next occupation is police officers. So law enforcement officers are exposed to a number of serious direct threats and stressful conditions. In addition, they experience and witness the devastating effects of assaults, robberies, kidnappings, and other unfortunate events. Individuals in this profession have surprisingly lower than expected overall rates of PTSD, which are estimated to be about 10% overall, so about every 1 in 10 officer. This lower than expected rate, though, is most likely due to the number of opportunities for individuals in this profession to engage in counseling. And to be honest, I think a lot of it is required, especially if you are involved in a certain sort of incident. They make you go to counseling. Not 100% sure about that, but I do believe that's the case. And they directly express a lot of their feelings to others once they are involved in these situations, as well as having rigorous pre-employment screenings that, you know, kind of assess their mental stability, mental endurance, and, you know, that sort of stuff. So, fortunately, that helps out those professionals quite a bit. So, the third one is firefighters. This profession also includes paramedic work and being first responders to natural disasters in most countries. It is considered to be an extremely hazardous profession, obviously. Firefighters are exposed to a number of stressful conditions and traumatic events ranging from the threat of their own personal safety to experiencing the devastating effects of these catastrophes. And the prevalence of PTSD has been described as high as 20%. So again, one in every five firefighter. And this rate can actually be even higher in volunteer firefighters because, you know, they're not as heavily trained. The fourth one is emergency medical and ambulance personnel. So people in these professions are routinely exposed to critical incidents and have higher number of health problems than individuals in other professions. Prevalence rates of PTSD in this group have been reported as high as 20% also. So again, one in every five. Other healthcare workers, number five. This is a group at higher risk to develop PTSD than other people in the general population. Especially healthcare workers in emergency rooms or intensive care units. However, there are a number of qualifying variables associated with this group of workers. So, for instance, nurses working in a critical care unit are more likely to develop PTSD than nurses in other units. Senior level nurses report fewer symptoms than junior level nurses, but then again, they also report higher rates of burnout. And healthcare workers exposed to violence such as assault are more likely to develop this disorder than the surgeons who actually treat the individuals coming in from violence and assault situations. And then number six, kind of surprising, is journalists. Some journalists, such as most specifically war correspondents, are exposed to increased risk of being injured, killed, or kidnapped. This particular population has a very high lifetime prevalence, which is close to or maybe above 30%. This figure can be explained as a lack of support and available treatment options for these positions. So a lot of people don't ask how the journalists are doing or how they're feeling about the stuff that they witness, which then leads to a higher rate of this stuff. And then number seven is the first responders to disaster. So rescue workers, medical workers, and volunteers who are first responders to disasters witness the aftermath and can even become involved in these severe traumatic events. The PTS rates here are pretty high also and are estimated to be around 15 to 30%. So that's a pretty high prevalence rate, especially when, you know, first responders aren't always have that rigorous pre-employment training on how to, you know, sustain mental toughness and, you know, not really take in what you're seeing, just kind of accept it for what it is. And yeah, that leads to pretty astronomical numbers here. But so, you know, this piece was really just to be more aware of your own emotional state at all times, and remember, always take care of yourself first. You know, you can't really help someone if, you know, you are in such pain like that yourself, you know. So yeah, thanks again for listening to this episode, and I believe the next one we will be tackling this next disorder is definitely one that's been found in pop culture and a lot of times is rarely understood in the most appropriate way for being what it is, and that is bipolar disorder. So look forward to that one, and thanks again for listening to this episode, and Nick out.